You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Skippy Dies, Paul Murray's darkly comedic novel set in an Irish Catholic boys' boarding school, became a runaway bestseller in 2010. It was a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award, named one of Time's top 10 fiction books of the year, and in 2011, British Prime Minister David Cameron put it on his summer reading list, taking it with him on a vacation to Ibiza. Paul Murray's latest novel, The Mark and the Void, takes on an equally secretive world of cliques, privilege, and dangerous impulsiveness, banking. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and I'm very pleased that it brings Paul Murray to our show today. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Len.
Did you conceive of this novel after the 2008 crash?
Yeah, I did. I handed in the final manuscript for Skippy Dies in 2009, and I sort of emerged from my cave to find that that the Ireland that I'd the last time I'd seen was booming. You know, we had this crazy economic boom between 97 and 2007 and thereabouts.
It was called the Celtic Tiger.
The Celtic Tiger, exactly. Yeah, when really the country was transformed almost overnight into this, just from being kind of this agrarian backwater into this powerhouse, this economic powerhouse, and suddenly all of that was gone, and the whole thing had just disintegrated again almost overnight. And it was terrifying. People were really scared. And initially, like, I didn't have any intention of writing a book about it, because the idea of writing a book about banks seemed so seemed like a tough thing to write about.
But both you have connections to banking. Your sister worked in a bank in Dublin, and hadn't you worked in a bank at one point?
I worked in something called a bank operations center, which is not the same level as a bank. It was an underground bunker, and my job, it was the first job I got out of university, and my job was to put checks into a check processing machine over and over and over again. So I was making minimum wage, and there was like millions of pounds flowing through my fingers every day. It was probably the most alienating job.
But that wasn't good research for working on this book. You had to do other things.
For this book, like everybody, I'd kind of been ignoring what the people in the big glass buildings were doing, you know. So like most people in Ireland, I sort of was given this crash course on the news every night in, you know, what a bond yield was and what a credit default swap was and all of these things. But I had to do quite a lot of research, because it's a really arcane, sort of esoteric domain.
You've said that during the Celtic Tiger years, before the financial crash, Ireland was a terrifying place to work as a writer.
Yeah. As I say, Ireland changed really drastically. And I think in the course of that change, there was a sense that, like, literature and art were part of the old world. Like, books and literature were one of the few things that Ireland was good at, you know, during the terrible times, which were, you know, all of the times before 1997. So when the boom came, kind of people sort of thought, you know, that's for when we were miserable peasants, and now we've got, you know, we've got SUVs and we've got sort of fancy coffee and so forth. So in that regard, I mean, on the one hand, there was like the very real problem that artists would face in a booming city, and that, like, you know, the rents are just going up and up and up. But more sort of corrosively, I guess, was the sense that, you know, you were sort of surplus to requirements that people didn't need that kind of.
So people were no longer proud of the fact that Yeats, Joyce, and O'Casey were part of this incredible national literary heritage?
I think their attention was elsewhere, you know? So people were happy to name bridges after these people, but to actually sit down and read a book was sort of seen as a bit anachronistic.
Your protagonist in this book, Claude, is French, not Irish.
That's right. I wanted it to be Ireland's. Became during the boom, became the most globalized country in the world. And the newspapers were constantly telling us this with great pride: we're the most globalized country in the world. So the cast of the book set in the financial service, the financial district of Ireland, and it's full of people from all corners of the world. So I wanted the narrator of the book to reflect this new Ireland, where a lot of people are from elsewhere, and everybody's feeling to a certain degree out of place. And also I wanted him to be French, because I feel like, you know, in France, they still have this very romantic concept of the writer. You know, they still sort of, I mean, maybe I'm being romantic myself, you know, but my sense is that they still kind of revere the writers as these kind of enigmatic, you know, intellectual, mysterious people. Whereas in Ireland, like I was saying, during the boom, it was kind of hard times and
Even for people like Roddy Doyle and some of the other famous writers?
Well, no, not for, I mean, for Roddy Doyle, and I think those guys are, well, like Roddy Doyle is such a clever guy that, I mean, he's always got several things to his bow. So, I mean, at the moment he's writing a libretto for an opera, and he's writing a musical for The Commitments, and but I guess for writers coming up, it was a harder time just because, you know, the attention, as I say, wasn't on.
But in this book, you also incorporate a novelist into the story. How would you describe the novelist whom you name Paul? Interestingly, Paul, written by Paul Murray.
Yeah, well, he's different from me. I guess I sort of thought of him in a sense as being like Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's probably all the worst aspects of myself, hopefully used to comedic effect. He's kind of nominally a writer, but he's kind of given up in the face of this economic boom. He's got really bitter, and he's kind of thrown in his chips, and he's decided that, you know, he just wants to make money. He doesn't really want to struggle with his craft anymore. He thinks all of that is over in the internet age. It's irrelevant. So he meets this Frenchman. Claude, the banker, and there's a famous Oscar Wilde quote: when bankers dine together, they talk about art, and when artists dine together, they talk about money. So the idea I had was that both of these guys wants what the other has, you know. So the banker looks at the author and he thinks, here's someone living this pure life of art, and he's kind of raised above the kind of the tedious money grubbing minutiae of daily life. And meanwhile, the artist, you know, wants to grub for the money. He really just kind of craves the security of.
You said that he meets him, actually he kind of stalks him.
Yeah, he appears at the start. The banker who's narrating the story just observes this figure in black who's watching him from a distance, and finally the writer comes forward and says, you know, I see you as like a modern day everyman, like a banker in a place like this weird, homogenous, you know, anonymous place that's the financial district that kind of represents, you know, the country we're living in now and the world that we're living in now.
Have you ever asked to shadow someone to learn about a character for one of your books?
No, I never have. I do a lot of reading for this book of necessity, and I've got a few friends who work in banking. I didn't ask because I feel I would have been politely rebuffed if they asked me if I tried to go in the door.
I'm talking to Paul Murray, whose follow-up to his bestseller Skippy Dies is The Mark and the Void. And you mentioned all of the banking terms that are included here. People are still a bit confused about what derivatives are and what some of these other things are, options. So you had to learn all about these things. You obviously didn't learn about them when you were putting those checks into a machine.
No. I mean, like any sensible person, like I avoided the world of high finance, you know, as long as I possibly could. But when I started investigating it, it's really interesting. It's really like the kind of the bankers and the wealth creators almost literally replaced the priesthood in Ireland. Like these were the guys with the secret knowledge who everybody looked to for you know, guidance on how to live their lives, which is, you know, obviously a terrible idea. But they speak in this kind of strange coded language. And it was difficult in two levels for me, because it was difficult just to understand, like, what, you know, I thought you were going to make me explain what a credit default swap was, but thank you for not doing that. It was difficult to understand that, and also it was difficult to put it on the page in such a way that it didn't bring the story to a complete stop, you know, to try and make it interesting and entertaining to read about.
But do you think that jargon contributed to the financial crash, the fact that much of what goes on in the financial world is too confusing for the layperson to really understand?
Well, not just laypersons. I think I was talking to a financial journalist last night who works on Wall Street, and she says it's a strategy. You know, if they don't want to answer a question, they will just deluge you with this jargon, which is kind of almost meaningless.
Paul asks Claude if the only reason he works in banking is for the money. And what does Claude think of that question?
Yeah, Claude doesn't really answer the question. I think Claude likes the... Claude is kind of almost an artistic perspective on it, I think. Like, he likes having the god's eye view. He likes having this, being able to sit in front of a screen and seeing, you know, the world unfold before him and having the sense that he's apart from it and he's above it and he's got this understanding of it that people, other people don't have.
We should point out that the plot involves a bank heist.
Yeah.
Did it seem inevitable? If you're going to write about banks, you need to include a heist.
I felt like if I had a story set in a bank that I needed to make it, I needed to give it some kind of some energy and some oomph, you know.
And you start right off with it. The very first sentence is about the heist.
I think I couldn't have a first sentence that talked about credit default swaps, you know.
You've written most of this book in dialogue. Do you feel more comfortable writing in dialogue than in, you know, first or third person of typical narration?
I feel like it's a really great way of just bringing scenes to life, you know. And again, like in a sort of fairly arid scenario, like a bank, you know, it's one way of like bringing the characters alive and making the stuff seem interesting. And also, I mean, Ireland and Dublin, like, it's a famously talkative place. It's really what people do all day is talk, you know. So I think it, if you want to write about Dublin, then the voices are the things you want to capture more than anything else.
And if anybody ever decides to make this into a film, you've already given them a lot of the screenplay without them having to work on it.
Well, I welcome any offers.
You thank the Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Donna Tartt in your acknowledgments in the book. How did she help you?
Donna was someone I met when Skippy Dies came out. It got one really bad review. It got mostly great reviews, one terrible review. And Donna read this review and liked the sound of the book and went out and bought us. And then she got in touch with me. So when I was over doing readings, I met her, and we stayed in touch. And she's a very generous, kind person, as well as being like very very brilliant. And when I was kind of two-thirds of the way through the manuscript, she asked, you know, if I wanted her to read it. And I was like, on the one hand, I was sort of terrified at the prospect of her reading my book. But on the other hand, I thought, like, this is such an incredible opportunity, you know. It was such an incredible act of generosity on her part. So she read it, you know, and she came back with some notes. And, there were strong notes, like, she made some really strong suggestions. And if I didn't take all of them, like, you know, every one of them, you know, if Donna Tartt, you know, says something about the book, you have to think kind of pretty hard about it.
Did you give it to bankers to get notes as well?
I was kind of afraid that they'd come back going, you know, this is not what a collateralized debt obligation is. So it was very late in the day. But thus far, they seem kind of pretty happy with what it says.
My guest has been Paul Murray, whose debut, An Evening of Long Goodbyes, was shortlisted for the Whitbread First Novel Award, and the Kerry Group Irish Fiction Award. His second novel, Skippy Dies, was shortlisted for the Costa Novel Award and a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award, named one of Time's top 10 fiction books of the year. Paul Murray's book is The Mark and the Void. It is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you, Leonard.